Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk with Gerald Salante in the third part of our program concerning the systematic collapse of the American economy and social governance. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, everyone's trying to stop it. Not Gerald. Why not? What does he see as a trend forecaster that the rest of us don't? We'll be going to Rhinebeck, New York, where Gerald holds forth with his Trends Journal and some of the finest minds in the world collaborating on telling us what's coming at us. Do we, in turn, have the honesty to look ahead? How should we approach the coming election now that it's time to take a look at what's out there? So Gerald Salante, he's always informative, interesting, and a very different type of personality. You won't want to miss that. A commentary today on I Don't Want to Conquer the World by Timothy Gatto of Countercurrents. I have taken Timothy's commentary, added my own, and you'll have a chance to hear that, and then I'll ask for your feedback. Also, a couple calls to actions today. I'll be going over why there's an urgent need for everyone in this audience in America to let their legislators know about how the GMO industry is making an end run around the courts to protect their interest, causing us our problems. In our environmental section, I will go in-depth of why GMO farming is poisoning the world's drinking water, hurting our bodies, and bad to the bone. Also, last week, New York State's legislature ended their session without acting to protect the state from the dangers of hydrofracking. Many of us felt that that was unfortunate, that they had a responsibility. After all, they work for us in protecting the state and our health. They have abrogated that across the line. So what do we do? Well, as yesterday, as many of you did, I got feedback that the governor's office was swamped with calls. Be polite. Remember, there is nothing gained by insulting him, but be conscious. Explain that we would like to sit with the governor. I could assemble a panel of outstanding scholars, scientists, and medical doctors who can bring forth information that would be compelling as to why everything that they're doing is wrong. Everything when it comes to hydrofracking in New York State. We need to have our representatives, those independent scientists who represent all of the rest of us, not just the lobbyists for the fracking industry or the legislators who are getting money for this. We need to have them. So we're going to ask the governor, please set aside time in your schedule. We will accommodate you. I will fly in. As I am up on all this, as are the other experts, let us sit and talk with you. Let us show you our science and then compare it to their science. Right now, you're making decisions based upon their lobbyists, their insiders, their allied groups, not us. So we're going to reach out to the governor today because he's the only one right now who can stop what I consider an irresponsible move to open up the poor sections of New York State to hydrofracking and what that will mean. Also today, the latest on health and healing. We work through the world literature every day, starting at 4 a.m. in the morning, to find you the articles that show you that making healthy choices is scientifically sound. Always presenting you with the peer-reviewed literature. Why do I emphasize that? Because how many times have you heard your doctor or pharmacist or nurse or someone say, well, you know, that's your opinion? No, it's not an opinion. It's based upon qualified science. The difference is you're willing to report some of that science, but not all of it. We want the independent science, not the proprietary science, to be what the public is made aware of. Let's begin. We know that metabolic syndrome is one of the most massive killers and disablers on the earth. It is quickly going to surpass heart attacks, and heart disease is the number one killer on the planet. In the United States, Conservatively, we're estimating upwards of 90 million Americans suffering from either metabolic syndrome or pre-diabetic or diabetic conditions. Here's the latest. Good news. This is from the University of New Mexico Health Science Center. And they're saying the following, and this was presented before the Endocrine Society's annual meeting just this week. Exercise and diet cuts metabolic syndrome. Quote, older adults who are obese can reduce their metabolic syndrome risk by not only losing weight, by adding exercise as well. The study authors showed that when you increase your exercise, you decrease the risk of type 2 diabetes and heart disease. Now, abdominal obesity, that's the fat around your waist and your circumference, that goes down when you exercise. Your blood pressure goes down, and your high blood sugar all go with it. So it's very simple. When you exercise every day, 6 days a week, for 1 hour, and you do it progressively, so you don't just jump into it and overdo it and hurt yourself, and you check your pulse, always check your pulse for 60 seconds prior to beginning your exercise. Then during your exercise, take your pulse again. If it's too high, slow it down. And don't just stop at the end of exercise. You cramp up all your muscles, locking lactic acid in and causing pain. Instead, cool down exercise for at least 10 minutes. Then you could help save your life. It's that simple. Also, I remember in dietetic school, because I am a registered dietitian, I graduated from dietetic school before going into more formal advanced nutritional educations, getting my Bachelor in Science in Human Nutrition, Edison State, and my PhD and postdoctoral work from Union Institute. I had a discussion with the professor who said a calorie is a calorie. Because, and you have to understand how they feed people and kill people and malnourish people, doctors, nurses, and dietitians in hospitals. And if you doubt me, I can show you where 50,000 Americans died in 1 year from malnutrition that they got from going into hospitals and eating that crap they call food. Shame on them. You couldn't get me to eat anything inside of a hospital. In any case, here's the deal. They would just load up with fat or with sugar, pure glucose, to meet a certain caloric input requirement. So my argument was, are you saying that the sugars in an apple are virtually the same as your corn sugars or your fructose sugars or your pure sucrose sugars? Yes. I said, it can't be true. But it is true. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you do a simple experiment? Why don't you feed, in a study, a group of individuals all of their caloric intake from pure sugar? If you say a calorie is a calorie, and it doesn't matter where the nutrient base was, then give persons 1,800 or 2,000 calories a day from sugar, pure sugar. And I'll give them their calories from grains, which break down slowly, releasing the glucose slowly, from fruits, berries, where the fructose level is low, and the natural fruit sugars are low and not concentrated. And then at the end of a month, why don't you check to see who's got metabolic syndrome? And you'll see how you can actually create from scratch diabetes, epithelial damage in the heart, retinopathy, damage to the eye, oxidative stress in the eye, causing cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, oxidative damage in the tissue causing fibromyalgia, oxidative damage in your joints causing arthritis, challenge to your immune system causing autoimmune disease. Why don't you just test it? If you're that confident, test it. It's simple. They wouldn't do it. Instead, they were basing it upon a theoretical model. And I said, nonsense to the theoretical. So I did a simple experiment. There was a group of scientists who were all orthodox oncological researchers. They were looking for the magic drug that would help people with cancer. Fine. They never found it. Spent a gazillion dollars looking for it. And they were downstairs. I was the guy upstairs doing the anti-aging research. in the nutrition research. I said, would you do a study? And he said, yes. I said, feed the average American diet to a group of animals, and I'll feed what I consider an optimal diet, but they both have to be identical in caloric intake. Protein, fiber, and carbohydrates and water. So there's no distinguishing a profile. So any dietitian looking at this would say they're identical. Identical diets, because they're measuring gross protein, fats, carbohydrates, water, and fiber. Fair enough. They did it. I did it. I fed fresh-made juices, whole grains, root vegetables, rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, carrots, cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, mustard greens, sunflower sprouts, fresh-made wheatgrass juice. And they were giving coffee. I was giving wheatgrass juice because it had to be the American diet. I then went down after 3 months and insisted they stop their study. Why? Hasn't completed. I said, because look at your rats. They're obese, they're unhealthy, and you cannot participate in something you know is going to end up having a bad outcome. I said, but look upstairs. So they came upstairs, and here I had 1,000 mice that were doing great in every way. And that's the first time any of them have ever been upstairs. It just absolutely freaked them out because I didn't keep anything in cages. And they were running all over the place and scared them. But they saw that there was no obesity. There was no cannibalism, which is common. There was none of the things that would mark these as being unhealthy. So they stopped it. I then took their rats upstairs and got them back their health. And they lived a long, healthy life, longer than normal, which is 12 months. I took all this information in with observational notes from the head of the department who had overseen this, and I presented this to a Dr. Berman in class, and I was told, well, this doesn't mean anything. I said, it sure does, because you're telling me a calorie is a calorie, and I'm saying a calorie is not a calorie. You're not measuring how quickly the calorie is releasing its energy, 4 calories per gram of carbohydrate, 4 per protein, 8 for fat. And I said, so as a result, you're putting people on low-calorie, high-fat diets that are killing them. I said, that's wrong. And he disagreed, but I was the student, he was the teacher. So all those students went out there filling up the person's nutritional profile with pure fat or pure sugar just to get the caloric intake up. This is the latest. This just came out today. This is from Dr. Carla Ebeling and Dr. David Ludwig, MD, director of a Obesity Prevention Center, Boston Children's Hospital. Quote, study challenged the notion that a calorie is just a calorie. And then it goes into depth about the source of the calories using 2 different diets. A low-fat diet, the one that I was challenging, which reduces dietary fat and emphasizes more grain products and fruits and vegetables. And then a low-glycemic index diet. And with a just the low-carbohydrate diet, like the Atkins diet. And guess which one made the most sense and was the healthiest? The low-fat, low-glycemic diet. Emphasizing again that the caloric intake of a grain, an apple, a pear, releases that into the bloodstream, as does a legume, pulse, slowly. And therefore, it does not contribute to a person's disease, whereas the low-carbohydrate diet is a disease diet. And that is dangerous. And yet the American public has been fixated on the high-protein, low-carb diet as if it's something that they must go through a ritual, and it's just bad to the bone. So the next time someone says a calorie is a calorie, you say, oh, no, it isn't, and we have the hard science to prove it. But we also have millions of injured, dead people. I believe that at least 5 to 10 million Americans are dead today who died prematurely of what they should have, died of diseases they wouldn't have had, or not at that point had they gone to a vegan, healthy diet. And we can thank Robert Atkins for that. He made a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars. And yet, look at the suffering that happened, and they're still doing it. Next up, I hope you're using your green tea, because green tea extract shows extensive health benefits for obese hypertensive. Now, that's kind of a double negative, because almost everyone who's overweight has some other problem. But hypertension or high blood pressure just happens to be one of the most common. This is an important study. Here's what it says. Extracts from green tea may lead to improvements in blood pressure, blood sugar levels, and markers of reduced inflammation. This is a new study. 3 months of supplementation with green tea extract led to significant reduction in levels of C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation, as well as significant decreases in both systolic and diastolic blood pressure in obese people with hypertension. And this was published in the Ponzen University of Medical Sciences Division. So, once again, drink your green tea, and it can help lower your blood pressure and save your life. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Well, one last one. I kept mentioning how important it is to have the apple and the apple peel. Well, here's a new study that just came out that confirms that, and here's what it says. Apple peel compound may offer obesity promise. Quote, Dr. Cantrell and colleagues point out that there have been many analyses of the impact of natural product substances produced by living plants, animals, and organisms on the production, and it goes in to talk about what these do, and then it goes into further depth and talks about what happens when you actually take the apple, and what is the healthiest part of the apple? The skin. And what happens when you have the apple skin? The phytonutrients are released, and when that phytonutrient is released, it helps block some of the ways that people get fat. So that is good news. Eat your apples, organic, and the skin. Juice the apples, even better. You want a super-duper, absolutely off-the-chart, healthy way to start the day? Take 5 apples, skin them, keep the apples side. You can juice them, make an applesauce, whatever you want to do that, apple, anything. But just juice. Blend the skin of the apples with blueberries, add in some vitamin C, and you've got one terrific way of flooding the body with the polyphenols from the apple skin, which can make an enormous difference in your health. Now, from our environmental section, and we're going to go to our guest, I'm asking people in this audience to call the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, And I'll give you his number. And in a polite way, and email him as well, tell him it's up to him to come to the protection of our beautiful, pristine lakes and water supplies and do not allow gas hydrofracking to occur in the poor sections. I believe that we must join together, all of us at the grassroots level, which is an enormous movement, and say it's time. It's time to ban gas hydrofracking in the state. And that's what we're working for. New Yorkers Against Fracking is a coalition grassroots. It's doing a lot on its part. This audience, we have been shoulder to shoulder with all the other groups, no matter what their cause, to say, let's stop the gas hydrofracking. Then let's stop nuclear radiation by closing down Indian Point. So let's ask the governor, politely please, close down nuclear power plant at Indian Point and disallow all gas hydrofracking. We have all the scientific studies in a binder. We have every single national report, an environmental report from the EPA showing the truth about hydrofracking, what it does. And all you have to do is give us a chance to share that information, and we will. Call the governor at 518-474-8390, 518-474-8390, or email him at governor.ny.gov/contact the governor. That's governor.ny.gov/contact the governor. So email him or call him and let him know this is our state. And they put over $60 million in their advertising and marketing campaign. And we don't have any money, but it's our state. It's not theirs. Hope that he gets that message. Also, this is also important, and this is another call to action today. Congress is very, very close to approving, probably this week, a very bad pro-GMO rider to the funding bill. And it could become law unless we all get involved. So I'm asking you to take action today. As we know, Monsanto and DuPont and other GMO industry giants inserted the worst kind of crony capitalist rider in support of genetically engineered crops into the 2013 Agricultural Appropriation Bill. And what this says in just simple language is that you call your representative and say that you want to voice your opposition. Now, as I discussed last week, the pro-GMO amendment would strip federal courts of the authority to halt the sale or planting of illegal, potentially hazardous, genetically engineered crops while the USDA is assessing potential hazards. What that means in lay language is that they could take years to assess it because they can drag their feet and tie it up in committees indefinitely. They control the USDA. They control Vilsack. They control all the people at the FDA and the USDA. All the while, those GMO hazardous seeds are being planted everywhere. And they could do that, and we couldn't stop them if this goes through. So let's call and let them know we don't want this. They've already won on most of the other things in there, so this is one thing that we can at least stop them. So if they do something, we can take them to court. If this gets passed, we won't be able to take them to court. So contact your congressional representative today. All right, there's not a moment to lose. Say no to this rider. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over and say hello to our guest who is standing by, Gerald Salante. Gerald is one of today's pioneers in trend strategy. He founded the Trends Research Institute and is the publisher of the Trends Journal that's been in operation since 1980. He has since been one of the nation's most accurate diagnosticians and forecasters on domestic and international events. And you've seen him probably on RTV, PBS, BBC, read about him in The Economist, because he's here to talk as a people person. Nice to have you with us, Gerald.
Oh, it's always great being on with you. Gary, can I make a suggestion about the hydrofracking?
Yes.
Why? I believe that the best way to defeat it is to have it on the ballot and let the people vote on it and to have it as a referendum. And I'm sure if it was on the ballot and it would give the people the opportunity to vote it up or down would be the most effective way of doing it. Having worked up in Albany as the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate, I don't have any faith in the politicians at all, and particularly when we know where they get so much of their money from. So just as a suggestion that if the coalition could work to get this on the November ballot, I believe it would be voted down, hands down.
All right, then why don't we do this? Could you set up a system that we could promote to show people exactly how we go step by getting it on the ballot as a referendum?
Well, I will definitely work on that. And if anybody out there knows how to do that as well, you know, they could contact me at gsalenti@trendsresearch.com. And I guess they know how to contact you as well.
Great. Gerald, I'm going to ask you just a couple questions and listen intently as you lay out the whole context of your argument. Many of us are extremely optimistic about the future for a simple reason. I've been in touch. I've spoken with Jesse Ventura. We've spoken with Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, Jill Stein of the Green Party, Rocky Anderson, Gary Johnson, and dozens of other people who really represent a populist point of view. And with only a few exceptions, there are few, mainly from Gary Johnson, where I've suggested take off the bottom section of your libertarian views, replace them with some humanitarian, conscientious, compassionate, spiritual views, and boy, you'll be really taking a leap forward. And he suggests he would consider that. But they're all looking towards the next election cycle, where they actually work together, surrendering the egos, work for a common cause, where then their individual strengths are manifest. So I'm optimistic in the next 5 years this will actually begin to take shape. On the other hand, we're faced with just the Democrat, official corporate Democrat and official corporate Republicans controlling this, the media that controls that, and the pundits that control it, as if that's the only choice we have. Take us through what you see as our options at this moment.
At this moment, my suggestion is to call a voter strike. We don't have to vote for a lesser of two evils means that as I look at it, and I hear it all the time, people say they're going to vote for a lesser of two evils. You're being an accessory to the crime. Who would associate with an evil? And I believe that if we get 40%, if only 40% or less of the people vote, we could call this an illegitimate election, because it is. These candidates do not represent the majority of the people. They represent the special interests and narrow interests within their ideologies. So to me, I agree with you when you talk about Ventura and Johnson and the others, that in possibly to bring them together in a new movement in the next election cycle. But by that time, we could be dead. And I don't say that as hyperbole. I say it as fact. When you look at what's going on and the lunacy that is being perpetuated by both the Republicans and the Democrats, let's just take a quick look around the world. Hey, let's start a war with Syria. Oh, they shot down a Turkish airplane. Well, the Turks at first said it, yes, indeed, it was over Syrian territory. But then we heard from Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, calling it a brazen act, and how NATO was going to unify in their opposition against Syria. So what they're doing, they just started a war in Libya that they cannot finish because now it's being taken over by the Al-Qaeda folks. You remember them. Those are the ones that began with Jimmy Carter supporting the Mujahideen to overthrow to get the Russians out of Afghanistan and accelerated under Reagan. And then they put in, of course, the Taliban that we're now ostensibly fighting to remove. Well, the same thing is now happening in Syria. So what we have, as I see it, are sociopaths and psychopaths that are leading us to destruction. And on a grander level on the economic front, because morality doesn't seem to bother anyone, or immorality, but money does. So tomorrow is going to be a big day in Europe with the Eurozone voting what to do next as the leaders and policymakers, I put those words in quote, they're neither, decide what they're going to do, how they're going to steal more money from the people to give it to the banks to bail out the banks. The entire global system is collapsing. And when you follow the line, it is a perfect parallel to what's happened before. The crash of 1929, the Great Depression, currency wars, trade wars, world war. The panic of 08, the Great Recession / Depression, currency wars, they're going on. The BRIC nations right now, their currencies are collapsing. There's currency wars going on, trade wars are heating up, and now world wars. So what I'm saying is we don't have time in 5 years, as I see it as a trend forecaster. And the only solution that I could see now is my campaign slogan is stay home, don't vote. If enough of us stay home, we could call this an illegitimate election, and the prostitutes, the ABC, NBC, CBS, and the rest of them will not be able to spin this election in anything else other than we don't want any of the above.
Or we could vote for third-party candidates to show them our support for the future.
I don't think enough at this time will bring a sizable percentage where it will make a difference. You have to go back, or consider going back, to Ross Perot in 1992. He got 19% of the vote, and it didn't do anything, whether you were with him or against him. It needs to be a win, not an almost win. It needs to be we have to move into number two. Oh, by the way, before I forget, something to look at, particularly those out there can speak Italian. There's a movement going on in Italy they call the Five Star Movement. It's being pushed by Beppe Grillo, a brilliant satirist. and they're taking over the campaign of taking over the top parties in Italy. It's a huge movement. He has millions of people following him. And it has to be, to me, at that kind of a level. Right now with John, you know, I've met the former governor, was it from New Mexico or Johnson? You know, and I agree with you. Let's get away from this libertarian, total libertarian movement, and let's put things in there also to help we the people. But it's too late for that. We're in July already, and this is we're finishing up, by the way, the Summer Trends Journal. And just a little background, Gary. I began my career running political campaigns in Westchester County. I taught at St. John's University in 1972, American Politics and Campaign Technology, one of the first courses of its kind ever taught in the nation. So I do have some background in this. And I also used to put together political action committees when they first began back in the 70s for the chemical industry. That's right. I was a different guy back then. That's why I know what I know, because I was there. I used to work for Lonza, Roman Haas, DuPont, Union Carbide. So I was on the other side. And what I'm saying is that, to me, as I see it now, the only way to win this is by not participating in it. There's no way that I can see anything happening. And the point that I wanted to make is that in all of my years of watching this, never before has there been such little enthusiasm about a presidential race as we're going into the home stretch.
Okay.
Never before.
All right, I got your point there. And I think it could work if we made it an issue so that people were not just watching the results of the two parties, but watching the results of those who refuse to participate. And I do agree. I would not waste a vote for the lesser of two evils, and I consider them both two evils. Now, let's go to some other issues in quick order here. I'm concerned that we do not have the understanding, the nuance in our society between who controls the government, the policies of those government towards the banks, meaning give back the banks the money, that when a $485 billion is given to Greece, that money didn't go to Greece. It went to the banks. But Greece owes it when it's rolled over, more money goes. It goes back to the banks again. If you went to Greece, you wouldn't see anything done with all this money. And you'd say, well, they're taking away all of our benefits. Where in the heck is all this money? The same is true now in Spain. Of $125 billion, almost $85 billion, that never reached Spain. It went to the banks and the people giving the money. Explain to us, so we understand this, there's three characters at work here. There's those insider people like Goldman Sachs manipulating with derivatives and playing this for all it can, and the vulture capitalists. They're those who want to get in there and take the assets of a country. You're weak, you're poor, you can't pay your bills, so we're going to take your best land. We're going to take your islands. We're going to exploit this and privatize it, and then you don't have any control over it. There's a third group, local politicians who are paid, bought, and sold, much like ours, to go in there and vote for all this. Then you have one whole completely different. You have the people. And initially, the people don't have the power until, as in Greece, they start taking it back. And then watch the Greek. I predict that the Greek people are going to revolt in the next 3 to 5 months when more austerity hits them. And they're going to throw the people that voted to continue paying out the austerity dollars back to the banks. I believe there's going to be a full-fledged revolt. I believe the same is going to happen in Spain. I think all they did was buy themselves a little bit of time. And I think the same is going to happen in Italy and finally in Ireland, not in Portugal. What are your thoughts on the likelihood of this happening in, or what do you think is going to happen in the European zone, and how will that impact the United States?
Well, first of all, I'm very disappointed in the European voters, as I am in the American voters. Spain just had an election recently, and they voted in the guy that said he was going to punish them more with more austerity. And then you look what happened over there in Ireland back in May. The same thing. They had a chance to get out, and they stayed in. And then right here in New York, we had what? Rangel. You know, this guy's what? You know, how many ethics violations was he brought up on? And the people voted him back in. I mean, this guy's in there for what? 22 terms? Did the cat ever work a day in his life? Been sucking off the public dole and stealing money, not paying taxes. And so what I'm saying is it's the people too, Gary. And they had a choice in Greece, and they voted for more pain. And then you look what's going on. Who's doing it? It's very clear. We wrote about it when it began under Bush with the TARP bailout. Our headline was Wall Street Hijacks Washington. It's a complete takeover. And I'll give you an example of how egregious the crimes are. Today, the breaking news was that Barclays settled because they were manipulating interest rates. That's right. They were manipulating interest rates. Trillions and trillions of dollars worth of interest rates being manipulated by these criminals. They're criminals. And what happened? And when I talk about manipulating interest rates, everybody out there understand it affects your credit cards, it affects your car loans, it affects your mortgages, and this group of criminals were the people manipulating them. So what did they do? Oh, the Commodities Future Trading Commission, they fined them. That's right, they got a $200 million fine. You see any heads roll? Not a one. Not a one. Did you see any heads roll with the MF Global takedown by John Corzine, former governor, former senator of New Jersey, former CEO of the Goldman Sachs gang? Nah. Did you see anybody head roll at the Goldman Sachs gang when they were nailed for $555 million in fines? Did you see any heads roll from the J.P. Morgan criminal group? Not one. Not one. The entire system has been taken over. This isn't conspiracy theory. It's fact. The banks are controlling our lives. There was a clip that's been going on the internet that was on CNBC, where you had these flunkies out there, these so-called experts and pundits, talking about how the central banks control our lives. It's right there for everybody to listen to. So it's the people. Until the people rise to a higher level, again, we just had an election, that disgusting rat wrangle being brought back into office. I don't know who ran against them, but none of the above would have been a good choice.
Okay, but a real quick synopsis. What do you believe will be the likely outcome of the Eurozone countries, of which there are 27, of which 17 work with the currency? What do you see the likely outcome to be over the next 2 years?
Oh, it's going to collapse at some point. This thing is only 10 years old. They put the euro coin came in 2002. It's falling apart now. How can it going to last? It can't last. But they're going to keep manipulating us and our money. And again, they're going to take us to war. They do it all the time. Look what happened when Obama took out Osama. He was down in the polls in April of 2011. Trump was railing on him. All of a sudden, we wake up. They got Osama bin Laden. The guy had been dead metaphorically or literally for several years. But Obama's poll ratings went up to over 60% from the low 40s. They get the people's minds off the real issues by fear and hysteria. And I believe that's what's going to happen. The financial system will collapse. As it's collapsing, they will divert our attention as they always do.
All right, over now to more pressing domestic issues. I'm concerned, as many are concerned, that the National Defense Authorization Act and Patriot Act II, Homeland Security Act, and over 37 separate acts are not really intended to protect us from terrorist attacks, but are more to protect those in power, including corporate power, from having to be held accountable to the American public. In effect, they are challenging the American public that we better keep quiet, stay in our place, do what we're told to do, or the law will not be on our side to defend us or the Constitution. What do you see happening as far as the military-industrial spy complex, which is now $1.4 trillion a year and growing? What do you see the likely outcome as far as our freedoms and our rights in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, this is the last two trends journals we wrote about. And the cover story of the spring edition was next train to Auschwitz, all aboard, kiss those calories goodbye. And that's exactly what we wrote about, is our loss of freedoms and how you don't see them being taken away from you in all at once. They keep eroding. We have none. And matter of fact, I'm sure you read and commented on the comments from Jimmy Carter. He's astounded by what's going on, about our loss of rights under the National Defense Authorization Act, under the executive orders, under the new guidelines by the Justice Department that allows them to monitor anybody for any. Now, you don't have to be guilty of anything, not suspected of anything. They could monitor everything that you do for 5 years, and they're building algorithms to determine whether or not you're a threat to the state. A threat to the state? To what state? Oh, the fascist state of America. That's right. The merger of state and corporate powers, bailing out banks, giving money to the corporate friends is called fascism. So now, Gary, they're doing this, and we've been writing about it over and over again because the financial systems are collapsing. Also, with the National Defense Authorization Act, they repealed the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act, which prevented the military from taking over police duties. So what are they doing in St. Louis now? Hey, you see those military
tanks.
Vehicles rolling down the streets?
Tanks in the streets.
Exactly,
yes.
Because they know it's collapsing, and they're going to keep it pushing us down.
Final question on this area. Most people in the United States are very frustrated, but their frustration has been misdirected from one side to the other, meaning if you listen to Mark Levin, I don't know how you can, but if you do, or Michael Savage, or many of those individuals, you think the only reason we have a problem is because we have those, you know, bad liberals or progressives or socialists or whatever they want to call. On the other side, if you listen to the left, it's all about, you know, the Republicans and those conservatives. And I'm saying they're both wrong. And I'm saying take a look back at what it means to be a part of any of that, and you're not going to have any solutions. So the media and those people that are the dominant, loudest voices are getting a lot of attention. What do you see could help people get free from this very limited view of life if all they're doing is turning on Fox or one of the other stations and just get propagandized nonstop?
Gary, it's about what you do, and you've been a crusader. And I mean, I learned from you about natural healing, and I it's the things that you talk about all the time. It's not about politics. It's not about money. It's about the individual. You know that wonderful Hindu saying, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And anyone that's really ever practiced at anything knows exactly what that means. You find the right teacher and you're dedicated, that's the whole difference. When the people are ready, the leaders will appear. Look what the people look like. Look what they've become. They've lost their courage. They've lost their dignity. They've lost their respect. They've lost their integrity. And they've lost their passion. I watched that clip about that woman who was the bus monitor being harassed by those little kids and her crying. If that was my Aunt Zizi or any of my aunts, my mothers, may their souls rest in peace, and some little kids started talking to them like that, boy, would have they unloaded on those kids. But no, they cry and they whimper. And that's all this nation is. It's a bunch of crybabies and whimperers. Until they find the spiritual, emotional, and physical courage to rise to higher levels, nothing will change, in my estimation. As I said, look what the Fighting Irish did in May. Whew, they went down under the pressure of the government. Look what the Spanish just did. I mean, the Greeks. Look what they did. They voted in the guy who promised to punish them more. Look what the people up in Harlem just did. They voted in Rangel again. So again, Gary, it's the things that you talk about, the holistic approach to life. Until more people do that, in my estimation, nothing is going to change.
All right, my final question for you, Gerald, is about 250 million Americans are bad to the bone when it comes to suffering. They're under a mountain of debt. Many of them are carrying the debt, which cannot be unencumbered, from the student loans of their children where they co-signed. Their mortgages are underwater. Their jobs have been cut back, frequently outsourced, or they've been insourced by people who are equally qualified, willing to work for half the price. And so they feel overwhelmed at this moment. what you see happening, the likely outcome in the next couple of years, no matter what the promises on either side are, for the average American, of which there are almost two-thirds in the American population now, what do you see happening to them?
Yeah, I see for most of them, unless there is a fundamental change, unless we dismantle the two corrupt parties, this is what I see for them. You and I and many of us are old enough to remember when this was a different country, when there wasn't a Staples, but there were corner stationery stores that gave the average person, the person that you're talking about, the average person, a chance to become an entrepreneur and to live a decent life. There was a time when there were hardware stores in every town. There weren't Home Depots and Lowe's. It gave the average person an opportunity. There was a time when there weren't Macy's in every or malls everywhere. It was a time when we weren't chained to chains, and people, the average person, could make a living by starting their own business and becoming an entrepreneur. There was a time when they didn't outsource all our manufacturing, and you could get a job and have a decent pay as a worker in a manufacturing sector. And until those things are reestablished, and there was a time when there wasn't Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup that were Duane Reade's on every corner of New York City and every other major city. There was a time when those were small banks, but everything has been deregulated. This is all, it's only a replay of history. So when you go back, what's going to be the future? The future depends on what we do. Go back. They put in the Glass-Steagall Act that prevented the banks from taking over the whole system. They dismantled the Clayton Antitrust Act, the Sherman Antitrust Act, and the Robertson-Patman Act that allowed the average person to get a shot at it. Until we put those laws back into place, what the average person could be to look forward to in the future is being enslaved for the rest of your life, because you're going to have to pay off that student debt, and the best thing you could do is get a job, maybe with Apple at one of their stores, as we saw that story, making, what, $11.50 an hour, or working at Walmart's or working at Home Depot or Staples or any of the chains. Until we break the chains, we will never be free. So that's the future. The future's in our hands. But the people have to make it happen.
Gerald, I also see that there's going to be an enormous movement of helping people get out of the cities and suburbs as they're being ghettoized and get into rural America. Sustainable communities, I believe, will be in the hundreds of thousands in the United States and around the world, working together and sharing in common ideals. I also am optimistic about that movement. It won't be for most people because they won't want to do it. But for those who do, I also see that there is a lot of positive coming there. I want to thank you, Gerald, for being on and sharing your insights with us.
Well, thank you, and I agree with you, by the way, on that.
Gerald Celante, up in Rhinebeck, New York, and I'll be up there, Gerald, in about 2 weeks. I'm going to be premiering a new film up there in Woodstock.
Great.
Maybe you can come by.
Oh, I'd love to. Kingston, New York. Kingston.
Yeah. Kingston.
Yes, okay.
The Trends Journal is published 4 times a year at the website trendresearch.com, trendresearch.com. I'm Gary Knoll. I won't give one of my commentaries because we won't have time, but I do want to give you a few things on genetic engineering. By the way, one suggestion, no, Gerald's gone. I would have changed the metaphor. I don't believe that you can compare what went on in World War II in the concentration camps, anything that we're suffering from today. Just a different metaphor, I suggest, Gerald. Now, here's what's important about this is from Green Med Info. Very good people over there. Sarah G. Jai, the founder. I'll quote this because this helps us each day understand why we should say no to all genetic engineering. In a groundbreaking study that was just published in Analytical and Bioanalytical Chemistry, evidence surfaced that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Monsanto's patented herbicide Roundup, is flowing freely into the groundwater in areas where it is being applied. Now, that's crucial. You all know that because the researchers found that 41% of 140 groundwater samples taken by, from Catalina, Spain, had levels beyond the limit of qualification, indicating that despite the manufacturer's claim, glyphosate herbicide does not break down rapidly in the environment and is accumulating there in concentrated amounts. That means it's bad. So why is groundwater contamination an important finding? Quite simple. Groundwater is water located beneath the ground surface that supplies aquifers and wells and springs. And if a chemical like glyphosate is mobile enough to get into the groundwater and is intrinsically resistant to being biodegraded, well, then we end up getting it. That is a bad thing. You can end up with significant environmental exposures to that water. 88,000 tons of that were used in 1 year alone. Keep in mind that glyphosate is considered by the EPA as a Class 3 toxic substance, fatal to an adult in 30 grams, and has been linked to over 20 adverse effects in peer-reviewed biomedical literature. So this groundwater contamination study adds to another highly concerning finding from last year, published in Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry, where researchers found the chemical 60 to 100% of all air and rain samples tested, indicating that glyphosate pollution and exposure is now omnipresent in the United States. When simply breathing makes you susceptible to glyphosate exposure, we know we are dealing with a problem of unprecedented scale. In fact, glyphosate broad-spectrum toxicity has been identified to be one potential cause for the disturbing loss of indispensable food starter bacteria from soils and cultured foods within certain regions of the world. So it's the very companies that are in Washington bending the ear of our legislators to get their way. Enough of that. More on tomorrow's show. Luann Panessi is on the line. Hi, Luann. And we also have... Hi, Luann. One second. I believe we also have Myron in studio. Hi, Myron. We'll have him there in a second. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I have a question here that came in on the Internet, and it kind of is like a metaphor to what we were just talking about with Gerald Polanco. My boy, he was fabulous. Right, spot on. Hillary from Brooklyn says, I heard you say on the radio that most people are not truly in sync in their relationships. And her question is, how would you know if you are in sync?
It's a simple issue. What do you share that you find passion, pleasure, joy, and ease of energy, where nothing is an effort? You don't have to talk someone into or convince them or argue them of the rightness of something to do, where you just flow together, that natural synchronicity, like watching two birds fly in the sky. One moves, the other moves in sync. One moves, the other moves in sync. It is effortless. That is when you know that you're in alignment. Now, it doesn't mean that one is wrong and the other is right. When you're not, it means we have our individual preferences and differences. But it's much better to be around people that you're more in sync on more issues than not. That's what makes a quality relationship. Hold your thoughts there because I want to get Myron in because I was told he has some important stuff to share with us. Hi, Myron.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to let you know how well your newest documentary is doing. We're trying something new with it, and it's a bit of an experiment. We wanted to get this information out, so we didn't want to have a barrier. It's about the FDA. It's called The War on Health. And we wanted to get this information out to as many people as possible, and so we didn't want a barrier for people to have to buy it and to go through any hoops. What we did was we offered it for free if you only click a link that allows you to post it on Facebook or Twitter. So it's called Pay with a Tweet, and it's really interesting stuff. So if people go to GaryNull.com, they'll see it right at the top, a link to where they can watch the film and stream it for free. And people are doing that. We're seeing record numbers of people for one of your films coming, and it's just doing extremely well.
I was told this morning that on Gary Null TV that as of this morning at 10 o'clock, there was 2,130,000 views as people who've gone to the site. Is that correct?
Those are that's how many people are looking up that content for sure.
Well, that's gone viral, because that will probably go to 5 million, we're hoping, later today. So when you're getting that many millions of people watching, looking for information, that's why they're going there. It's nothing else on that site. So it's going viral, so this information is getting out. So thank you and everyone over there for posting it up there for people for free. So now everyone can watch this very hard-hitting documentary about our freedom of choice and our constitutional guarantees being challenged by the FDA and the federal bureaucracies and the pharmaceutical companies. Go to GaryNall.com. You'll click there. You can watch it for free. And also, I was told, is this true, that we had the highest increase in audience in the last 4 weeks on this non-commercial radio station?
Yeah, we're looking at a fourfold increase.
400% increase in audience.
It's incredible. It's unbelievable.
Okay, well, that's a record. I've never heard of that in my entire career. So people are tuning in, and thank you, Myron.
Thank you.
Back to you, Luann.
Okay, I have another email here from Barbara from Cincinnati. She says she's a new listener, about 3 months. She's been downloading all the shows, and her most favorite show is the Monday Night Show. She feels it's the best in radio or TV, bar none. She said she tried an exercise that you suggested, and she was a little bit confused about her life because of it. You told her, validate, deconstruct, and challenge everything. And that's what she started to do. She said, I'm 37 years old with an advanced degree, and suddenly I realized just about everything I used to believe in is a lie. And I wasn't emotionally prepared for the truth about anything. And I need some help with understanding where to go from here.
I mentioned the other day that what we deny, we cannot change. And unfortunately, Luann, today, with as assertive and aggressive as many people are in their careers, fearing that if they're not always aggressive and trying to achieve and do more, that they will be let go because someone else will be willing to do more than they are. Hence, people over-identify with their work. We confuse what we do with who we are. And quite simply, we are more relevant than the work or possessions in our life. So there's a time when we have to stop for a moment and ask ourselves, what in my life, right now, in this moment, can I validate that's essential to my happiness and health and well-being? And when you do validate what is important in your life, then you have a life and you can go forward with that. But if you're looking at the things you have or people in your life or all your time and your energy is spent constantly doing the right thing for someone else all the time, then you're living by a story, an old story, and you got to tear that story up and start from scratch. That's why, as I was mentioning to Gerald, and we both concurred on this, you actually have to have a society as a whole and a body politic as a whole break down, create a crisis. From that crisis, you can break through, because most people never stop eating a bad diet till they have a health crisis. Most people will not stop buying and spending money that they're not going to get any return on until they end up in bankruptcy or overwhelmed with debt that they cannot pay. Then they go through what they cannot control. And why do we have anger and anxiety? It's what we can't control. And when you finally realize that your anger and your anxiety about what you can't control, you resign yourself into depression, and from depression, apathy. Then and only then do most people seek some kind of help. But the help that they seek is one that allows them to deny and avoid their real inner anger and their rage. And as a result, they project it upon others. So we have to stop adapting. We have to create a new beginning, and that means change. That means change everything that doesn't work for us anymore. And so that's what I'm suggesting this person do or anyone else do. Don't confuse your external realities with your inner truths. Trust your intuition. You only have this moment. So ask yourself, what are you going to do with it? You're going to give it to a political party? You're going to give it to doing more work, spending more hours? You're going to do it, go through social rituals and personal rituals? Or are you just going to live an authentic life, light and easy, so that you're honest about what you see in the mirror? It's you. And therefore, you're honest with everyone. When you're honest, you're living a simple life. When you're not, you're living an extraordinarily complicated life. And I think that's part of our task. Get simple, get off the grid, get honest, get authentic, surround yourself with people who are honoring you in your own authentic self. Thank you. We're out of time. I'm Gary Knoll. See you tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.